Hey, what's up, Toby? We've made it to episode 19 of the podcast. I learned a little something last week, which was I cannot do a podcast by myself. But we did hit our five minute time cap for the very first time.
How did that feel to deliver on the promise of a 5 minute podcast?
It was terrible. It's so hard to just sit there and talk. So what's funny is I'm sitting there talking and I'm like, okay, keep talking. So, I mean, we might have lost, you know, ones of listeners last time.
Well, I will send a mea culpa to our listeners up in the Northern Frontier. And if there's others, you let me know.
Perfect. I do think that, you know, I told people you were on vacation, but what were you really doing last week so that the podcast was not as important as it should have been. What were you doing?
Sadly, I wish I could tell you that I was doing something like a vacation, but I actually was grading.
Grading paper. So Toby's a professor.
Yes. Part-time adjunct. Well, I mostly do it for the celebrity that comes with being an adjunct professor. And that's really only second to the money that this absolutely craps. So listeners can always mail me in with a question and I will, like, they can download my secrets to growing wealth very slowly.
You have told me how impressive some of your students are, which has been actually pretty funny.
They are. You know, I feel really fortunate actually to be involved with a program that isn't just traditional students. And so,
nice.
Yeah, sometimes it's epic and I love getting to work with adults that finally have enough space to return to the work, you know, from workforce and start finishing their degrees. But I do get some questions sometimes that make me think, you know, this is a 400 level class. Maybe we should re-gear it a little. But that's the world around. I get those, as do you, I'm sure. We get questions sometimes that make us think, I don't know if you have the right ticket to be in this line. But
all right. The topic for this week is a bit of the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is simplifying complexity.
Yeah.
And specifically, I've started to notice where at higher levels, there just is this great oversimplification of just the complex world that we live in.
Increasingly, right? It's not like we go to the corner grocery store and buy things from somebody we know that lives in our community.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's transactions or services or just trying to run a business. Yeah. Nothing is ever as straightforward as it seems.
Yeah.
What specifically, I'm 100% with you, and in the spirit of survival for some and just the embracing of ignorance for others, what sparks this thought about the complexity of the supplier relationship,
that vendor relationship? I've been thinking a lot about just cars in general.
Okay.
And how much I think I know about cars and how little I know.
Yeah. Before we jump into that, Chris, where do you rate yourself on the continuum of like zero is you need to tell me what a car is. And then 10 is I could be on the click and clack PBS show diagnosing things based on sound. You know,
I would give myself like a 2 or 3.
Yeah.
And I could probably name like maybe 5 things. But like literally, I could go to my mechanic and they could make up a mechanical looking thing and I would give him $600 because it said red and critical.
Did you just pay to get your flush capacitor flushed?
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. I do know what you're talking about. I know that feeling when somebody's describing, you know, here's what you need or here's what you should do. And they say in such a blatantly straightforward way that you feel kind of stupid to say no.
Yeah. Well, and my mechanic, you know, they send a text message. I click on it and it's red, yellow, and green. Reality is like, I literally don't know what it is. But the thing that made why this kind of popped up for me was I was just thinking about like sometimes I'm in meetings and instead of going to kind of the shop floor to the people that are actually doing the work, like there's this great oversimplification of like, ah, well, you know, you just gotta, I mean, it's the thermostat for sure. You know,
and you're
like, And so oftentimes in business, they're like, make the car go faster. And the mechanic, the shop floor is like, well, I mean, that would require a new engine and that's going to be $7,000.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the person saying, no, just give it a paint job. Just give it a paint job. And then you go and give it a paint job. And then they give it back and they're like, man, looks great. You take it on the road, doesn't go any faster. And they're like, it was supposed to go faster. You're like, yeah, I don't know, man.
Chris, what I love about that example, and you're speaking to the consumer vendor relationship, but
yeah.
I also have experienced that with managerial layers. And so
100%.
The shop floor does tell the supervisor, this is the problem. If only we had X, then we could unlock things. We could remove the blockage. And then the supervisor has to translate it to the manager.
Yep.
And they have to walk it up some kind of approval chain. And at each layer, they simplify it because everybody assumes the guy up the ladder is dumber.
Yeah.
That's why they should have the job, right? That's kind of the natural machinery. But yeah, by the time it gets to somebody, it's like, you want a paint job to go faster? Okay, it's cheaper than $7,000.
You're like, when I was a kid, if I got new shoes, man, you should have seen me run.
Right. I think they made shoes faster then too, Chris.
Well, they did.
I can't even afford fast shoes anymore. I don't know what's going on.
Oh man, that's funny. So,
but you're right. Yeah. I mean, I think too, your point about where are we asking the question and
sure.
Are they prepared to do that translation layer?
Yeah.
I know the text alerts that you're describing. I remember the first time I got those and I thought, wow, this is so helpful. I feel like I really understand what's going on.
Yeah.
But then when I looked next to the color codes, which are spectacular, supervision messaging.
Yep.
There might be a recording where the mechanic was showing me exactly what's going on, but he could have also been showing me the underside of his motorcycle and where he was going to spend the money I was paying him for nothing, you know?
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting is I think that a lot of times this is where process debt comes when it comes top down.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, you know, one of the things that I, you know, like to look for is just a cohort, right? So like you're out doing something like it can be anything, you know, you could be, you know, remodeling your kitchen.
Yeah.
Right. And if you just go in and you figure out what the average remodel is, just go to Angie.com, figure out what an average remodel is. You know what? That's what it's going to cost you, regardless of what the person says, because all the unknown unknowns.
Yeah. Well, Chris, this is, I think that you're raising attention to this idea of what is that role of expert?
Yeah.
My expert, not just the expert, but my expert.
Sure.
And so if it's a mechanic you've gone to for a number of years, you've developed rapport.
Sure.
You know, you've told others what you've paid and they're like, gosh, you must have a great mechanic. That seems really reasonable. That kind of social validation helps me get comfortable with things that I may not understand. I turn to my network of people that know more than me.
Yeah.
You and I together maybe add up to a 5 or 6 in terms of like automotive expertise.
Maybe.
I can't even put gas in my vehicle anymore. I got to the point where they took that away and they said, you now shall drive an electric car because you clearly know what you're doing.
You shall plug it in.
Yeah, that's right. Can you handle a plug-in? Yeah. But I often feel like you're right. There's realms where I don't have an expert. And
sure.
So then you picture a big organization. Everybody is supposed to be the experts that are doing their best work to translate it to senior decision makers.
Yeah.
But where that takes a lot of practice to get an effective translator, both up and down.
And I wonder like, cause every level is an abstraction, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so from the top down, it's an abstraction and from the bottom up, it's an abstraction. Right. Yeah. And typically on the bottom floor, you have lots of ideas and most of the time you're pretty stubborn.
Yeah.
Right. When you go to the shop floor, the mechanic is like, look, I do it this way. And this is how it's done. Right.
And it's pretty binary, right?
Yeah. Well, and you don't end up with great innovation. I don't think at the very bottom. And I don't think you end up with great innovation at the top.
Yeah.
Like it has to come up or down in order to really be successful, I think.
Well, so we've talked about the Toyota way on past calls. You've read it more recently than I have.
Yeah.
So when you're doing a shop floor walk,
sure.
As I recall, the intention is to have folks with different perspectives and not everybody just from the shop floor, but also not just everybody from the C-suite.
Yeah. One of the things in the book, they talk about, like, they would go and put someone on the shop floor for 8 hours and they would literally not give them any homework. Like, there was no outcome. Just go and sit and watch, just see what's happening. And then they were done for the day. And it was very foreign for, you know, Americans, in which you're like, wait a sec, what's the point? But then the other thing is, like, the other thing that they did is they would go to the shop floor and they would figure out all the problems, right? And they'd be like, hey, here are 80 problems that we could experiment to see if it gets better. Yeah. And it's almost like as it gets simpler, like the solutions sound more confident.
Yeah,
but there's less of them, right? So the higher you go up, it's like, we're going to do gen AI.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be amazing, right? And at the shop floor, it's like, here's the tactical next steps fixing X, Y, and Z, right? And you know, the problem with, you know, the tactical on the shop floor is, like, oftentimes this stuff gets lost in the handoff.
Yeah, for sure.
Like literally, it's one of the things I'm currently working on right now is just a handoff between two systems.
Yeah.
Like, there's a missed handoff. It's system to system, and so no one actually even sees it as a problem. But I'm right in the middle of it.
So the experts that might own each of those systems, this is the dead space in between where it just magically happens.
Totally is, right? So we have, you literally have process dead on both sides.
Right.
Right. And because you don't have a clear communication between the systems, you have both sides wanting to be very efficient on both sides, and they can be as efficient as they want, and they will never get innovation because innovation's in the handoffs.
Chris, I'm rarely conscious of time, but we are over 5 minutes. Maybe in our next episode, I'd love to explore this conversation more deeply about, is it process debt if you find a place where process does not exist? And your example here is beautiful, right? Between two active processes, there's simply a void.
And I think that's where, like, you know, that's a good call out, right? It's really a systematic problem.
Yeah.
And so you actually have great efficiencies in the silos.
Yeah.
You have process debt in the middle, even though it's the system communicating back and forth, because the system can't be as good as it needs to be because it's got broken communication.
Yeah. The unknown unknowns of where those missing socks go. It's the void processes.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we did it again.
We did it again, but we're under 15.
I know. Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
See you next week,
man.